This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
To another episode of Richer and the Mailman, and wow, things are really starting to fall into place here. Also, got to see New Hampshire, which, in case anybody's wondering,
is in New England.
Is in New England, and also that's the name of the song that's playing right now. So, in case anybody thought that we got off track with our thematic music,
yes, we always promise that our music will be thematically applicable.
Yes. In case this is your first time, I'm Josh Richer, and I'm joined here by Jeff Machado, who is a U.S. Postal Service member.
For the time being.
For the time being. Touch and go. And we're Richer and the Mailman, and what we do each week is we talk about Breaking Bad, and we talk about all the other goings on in the world. Typically a lot of Breaking Bad, though.
Some of the other goings on. Not all of them.
Not all of it.
There's actually a lot going on.
I'm
going to
skip quite a bit, actually,
yeah.
I'm thinking. I don't even know where to begin. I guess we'll have to say, we obviously got to save the Breaking Bad stuff, even though that's the dominant part of my weekend, normally.
Well, let me begin with a question.
Yeah.
Since Breaking Bad has dominated our weekends for upwards of 7 weeks now, what will happen after the last episode? What will our weekend, what will we look forward to?
Well, that's tough. That's tough because I haven't even started watching other shows that I would watch on Sundays because I've just been so pumped for Breaking Bad, and I've been trying to fit, I know that once I watch it, I'm just going to get sucked into the world of Breaking Bad. I'm going to start reading fucking recaps. Watching Talking Bad, which is always a pleasure, always a fun time.
I'm a big Chris Hardwick guy.
Yeah, I like him. I like him. I think he's got a good energy to him. So but he's funny. He's funny. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's kind of like
this guy. The poor like man's Chris Hardwick.
He's like the poor man's Robin Williams.
Poor man, Robin Williams. Wow. See, I think Chris Hardwick would actually like to be thrown into that category.
Yeah, that's exactly what he wants to be.
If someone said that about me.
Someone says this thing, and I'm doing this thing, and I'm going to go on a little riff here, but I fill time. What do you think about that, eh? Ooh, let's be funny. Let's be funny for the podcast.
Actually, that's a really good... Now that you do that impression, your description of him seems wholly accurate.
I like to think so.
I'll tell you, my weekends are pretty good, though, okay? My weekends... Already, this past week was actually really good. Got together with both PTB Godfathers, Scott Crisculo and Justin Rosero, along with Andy Flanagan, as some of you may know from past Space Nation episodes. And also, I believe he's written for the site. He's written a few things so far. Hung out with them, of course, Matt Rotella, as always, which a lot of our people don't know who he is, and they're lucky, because...
Matty Rowe.
He's a good guy.
I don't know if anyone
just kidding. Just kidding. We actually went... started the weekend out right. We went to Boneheads for lunch.
Oh, Boneheads.
Boneheads for lunch. Okay.
That's a good lunch.
Yeah, if you're new here... Boneheads is a place that's near where a lot of us live over here in West Warwick, Rhode Island, which is a very small town and a very small state. But they've got some of the best wings I've had. I know it's making some waves in the entire state of Rhode Island, which might not be saying a lot, but as far as a grand scale of things. But around here, it's been a while since, especially in that town, that we've had anything close to it.
Well, hey, if you're trekking your way to New England to see where... this last episode of Breaking Bad was filmed. Stay tuned for details later.
Yes, we will be hitting you up with the complete deets.
If you're going to be swinging through New England, you might as well stop in the Boneheads. Get some awesome wings.
It was great, though. We actually, we got the wings, got to watch some college football. Actually, I had a one that had, like, apple, a wing called New York, New York. That was it was pretty rad.
Because New York's the Big Apple.
New York is the Big Apple, as you know.
I never really understood
it's
that.
It's full of apples. Oh, I actually, I don't want to go off on this tangent, but actually, so at some point in the past couple of weeks, I fell asleep completely stoned. And just captivated by a show that broke down. Oh, in case anyone wonders, I tend to use marijuana at night to fall asleep.
This show brought to you by marijuana.
Yeah, sometimes. It ain't no big thing. It ain't no big thing at all, right? Like, it's pretty common. We accept it now in society.
It's like gay marriage. It's practically legal everywhere.
Also. Yeah, it is practically, actually, I think gay marriage is more legal, but yeah, you know, you're right. But either way, so I'm watching this show about slang and the evolution of slang in America, and Big Apple was one of the things that they did. It was actually a sports, a sports writer used it, and he had heard it from some Louisiana stable guys that worked at like a horse track in Louisiana talking about New York being the Big Apple in horse racing.
Because horses eat apples?
I think so, or it's something. Maybe they really liked apples, and that's like the prize is getting an apple. I don't know how poor they were, is what I'm saying. I don't know like how that worked. But
around here, we define our prizes by apples and apple quality.
And quantity as well, I'm assuming. That place, that's the mini apples.
What a stupid city. If you're from New York, you're an idiot.
No, that was from New Orleans or Louisiana. That's where the people used it.
Yeah, but they embrace it.
But either way, so it took off. That's where we got it. So, but either way, backtrack a little. Bonehead's had it. That was great. Also had an apple fried empanada, which I've never had dessert there, and that was delicious. Good times. A lot of good times. But Jeff, Scott actually ate the wings that you ate that time. Not as many of the ones that nearly killed you.
The killer super death wings.
Yeah, he cried. There's no lie about that. I saw it. I believe we have it on video. But his nose didn't bleed. So.
Well, I have a sensitive septum, so my nose is just more prone to bleeding.
That's true.
It really not has anything to do with the strength of the wings. I mean, I just get...
What are you saying about their wings? They're not as strong as they make it out to
be? No, they're strong. They are not something that anybody should eat. It's actually kind of upsetting because I like to do a good food challenge. I like spicy food. But you're not supposed to eat those things.
No.
It's bad. It's like poison.
Is poison.
You can't even touch yourself. You can't even go to the bathroom because the parts that you're touching.
It seems a little silly.
To go to the bathroom are going to like burn later.
I mean, if you have to like, you know, show how big your wiener is, it's a good way to do it, but...
but yeah, you know what? I'll be damned if I'm not going to do that challenge someday. I will eat seven.
I know you will. I know you will. And I hope to be there with you documenting it all along the way.
Because it's
that's for another time. I did that. And then, that was a fun part of the weekend. And obviously, I felt gross next day because those guys, they can, they can throw them back there, you know, when we're just chilling.
When you get like pints with guys who are twice your size, you're just little guys.
I feel bad. It's like I felt really bad that morning. But then things got worse. They took a turn for the worse because in the middle of the day, I found out there was E. coli in the water supply in my county, and can't have the water anymore. And you need to use bottled water or boil. Which I mean, that is some that is some like. Some cowboys and Indians type things.
Yes, E. coli in the water supply is something that I thought...
I'm convinced someone did
only
it.
Happened in... That's like poisoning.
I'm convinced someone did it.
Someone tampered with our water.
Because how does the E. coli get into the water supply? Like, how do they not catch it, like, beforehand?
Well, they caught it really fast. Apparently, there's a lot of strains of E. coli that actually live in our body at all times. But they'd have to do tests, like, daily. It's just the concept of people providing water for millions of people in, like, a small area. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more
often. No, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go get my own water from now on. I'm going to go find my own well. Tap that shit.
I'm sure there's plenty of water that we could just be tapping. But
yeah, I'm
going to
find
lazy.
It.
We're too lazy
I can't rely on the man anymore. They're clearly susceptible to poisoning attempts, and I just don't feel safe.
Yes, well...
Well, you, they closed Boneheads, actually. They're closed today. Things are just gone. You know, I had to go through that whole thing where you go to the store to get a bottle of water, and it was, as you can imagine, That was just the worst experience ever.
Yeah, E. coli kind of has a hurricane type effect on stores where things just
like just vanish you're off walking the in and you see the sheer volume of people walking out with carriages full of water. And I know I've been to the store before, and I know that all the water is in one section. So just getting to that aisle with the carriage, no, forget it. You're gonna have to pull it out of the aisle without a carriage because how are you gonna even get?
You should have done is called somebody who was going to the store already.
I need to go anyway. And I have
them
food.
Have them take a case of water and hide it in like the crackers aisle. So only you would know it was there.
Drop off box. I think I put a GPS on it so I could track the coordinates later. Oh, it's turning into some sort of caper.
That's what you should have called ahead, man.
I know, I should have. But you were personally affected, it seems like, because you're not doing so great.
Well, while you guys were at Boneheads, I was at my friend's birthday party, Adam Ferbert's. Who's going to be like the next Picasso? The guy's a great artist. Anyway, he's a sick, twisted individual who every year on his birthday likes to watch bad, scary movies.
So yeah, I also enjoy that.
You would have loved it actually because
I probably would have.
We watched two classics of cinema. We watched Alice in Murderland.
Okay, I see what they did there. That's classic for the bad
movies.
It's
like Alice in Wonderland, but with murder.
Exactly. That's all it is.
And Poltergeist.
I've seen most of that one, and that's a trauma film, actually. Those are the guys that do
Captain Something.
Captain Something. No, Toxic Avenger, sorry.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That movie gave me nightmares for
that one tonight, too. They do Toxic Avenger, the great Sergeant Kabukiman of NYPD. It was a guy that turns into a Kabuki man, but he's a police officer, too.
Yeah, any kind of
particular. They make ridiculous films.
Transformation that is captured with the use of makeup just freaks me out.
And there's a lot of poo in that movie too. A lot of feces in Poltergeist. The one I saw, they actually had to put like an X over like where the butt would because there was just stuff pouring out of the butt, like just brown spraying.
Yes, I did notice that. It was a very feces themed weekend actually.
But then Jeff, you.
Well, I don't know if somebody made deviled eggs with bacon. It was delicious. There were communal drinks everywhere. I think maybe I might have – because I called up the water authority and they said my house wasn't affected by the E. coli contamination. But I have been incredibly sick all weekend. I have – you know, let's just – we're all friends here. Everybody who's listening, they know me personally.
They know you personally. They've got to know you.
I can't eat. I've got diarrhea. With blood.
I shouldn't laugh at that because it's so bad.
You shouldn't laugh at it because it's terrible.
But diarrhea is bad alone.
And so
with blood.
And so what do I do? I'm looking at Facebook and there's this, E. coli in the Warwick water supply. I Google the symptoms of E. coli. Number one, diarrhea with blood.
So I
don't know if it was something I ate or if it's just a coincidence, if I caught some other kind of bug because I'm a mailman. I work with disgusting mail and people every day, so I don't know. But, yeah, it's been kind of rough.
This is where I start, like, backtracking in my head, thinking about things that I might have touched since meeting up with you today. Like, I start going, what have I touched that he has touched?
Well, hey, man, I've got the Purell, like, in three different stations in my house. Because I don't want my poor, poor sister to get sick.
I'm not boiling water here to catch E. coli anyway from someone else. I'll tell you that.
I'm doing everything I can.
You should have a sign in the front that says, "We have E. coli. Stay away."
Just like a skull and crossbones?
Yeah, yeah. I feel duped.
Well, I hope I feel better tomorrow, but we're going to find out. Tomorrow, if you're listening to this now, is today, which is Tuesday.
Yes.
Which reminds
guys,
me.
Guys, Tuesday, Jeff is feeling okay.
So Boneheads may or may not be open today. We'll check that out.
But if you're driving
we'll post something.
We'll let you know. Now, I guess what we got to get in, and we're losing time here.
Alice in Murderland, not as good as it sounded.
Well, actually, you were saying something about that. It was very poorly produced, you were saying.
There was zero production value.
Production value and
it was rated R.
Rated R.
There was blood and all these gross scenes everywhere. No tits.
That's a travesty because it's like if they're making you watch a bad movie, which they know they are.
Yeah, exactly.
And they know that they're delivering on the blood and violence from what you're saying and the gore, which is a part of that R rating, but
a very small part.
No, it's a big part of the
R. You're hiring all of these underachieving actresses who are bad at acting.
They're bad at acting, but the one thing they have is that they're hot.
They're hot. But they didn't show any tits.
But there's no tits. It's like, if you...
I was personally
offended.
Mr. Director
offended. Or producer of this shitty-ass movie, and no, sorry to say that, Jeff, I don't know if it makes you feel weird saying shitty-ass, but...
it's clever.
Not really. But, like, you want to wonder how these guys aren't able to convince one of these stupid, young, bad actresses who haven't been in much and would like to be in more to not take their tits.
That's the thing. There wasn't even one. It wasn't like, oh, the slutty one showed her tits. Not even one of them showed their tits, which means it was like an agreement. Like, it's like, oh, we're just going to make this movie. You're not actually going to show anything, but it's going to kind of be provocative and you're going to be wearing sexy, you know, like Halloween costumes and stuff.
Because
it was a waste of my time.
Costumes,
and it was an affront to my friend's birthday, and it makes me really sad.
But he had a good time and you had a good time, right?
Yeah, we had a good time, except for the part about catching possibly E. coli poisoning. Yeah.
And plus, I don't think he cared about the tits, to be honest. But yeah, either way, moving on. We need to move on because we're talking about the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad, season 5. Oh, wait, no, not just of all of Breaking Bad. So if
the penultimate episode.
If this is we're going to start getting into that here. You can skip ahead. You probably read the description and told you exactly where to go, because we talk a little bit more about the Emmys, which is another big thing that happened last night during Breaking Bad.
This may be our last podcast, because Josh and I are finna get in a fistcuffs.
The fisticuffs are happening.
the Emmys.
But, so, skip ahead, because you don't want to ruin your experience watching the show, because it's all based on the plot of the show. It's plot-driven, and you'll just ruin the experience, and then you'll blame us, possibly, but you can't, because we're telling you now, don't do it. So, later, for everyone else, this is where we talk about Granite State.
Granite State, New Hampshire.
Yeah. My first impression of it, after watching the entire episode, was just like, how beautiful is the setup from that last episode that we saw that was insanely eventful, and also like you had this emotional response to the episode, you know, and obviously left everyone shocked and anxious and in the hospital.
It was just things happening constantly.
Yeah, like they follow that up. You wonder how they're going to bridge that with the finale, which finales need to wrap things up and they need to have a certain tone. But you couldn't go there from there to here. Like, I guess you could, but, like, we need to slow down a little bit and regroup, because we still, like, up until this episode, we had yet to, like, go ahead or even be in that world that was Live Free or Die, the first episode of season 1, part 1.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering how they would do it, but I think this setup right here for the end was beautiful. I think that it was, like, actually everything fell into place perfectly to set us up for, like, it all makes sense. It doesn't seem like they're going to be rushing. And also, it kind of poses Walt in a different way of looking at him. Like, I'm definitely going into this changing the way I was looking at him from the past few episodes.
Yeah, after the scene where he authorizes Jesse's murder and subsequent torture and reveals that he let Jane die, you pretty much have zero sympathy for Walt. And then, of course, the phone call, and it's just terrible. Like,
which some people still didn't get, by the way. I was seeing on message boards this week.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed in the writers a little bit for, like, they just laid that out on a silver platter at the beginning of the episode. They were like, oh, the phone call was a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you didn't get it, then I don't think you deserve to get it, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Point being, after that scene where Walt is just so terrible to Jesse and just sends him off into this misery of just horrible death that awaits him with the psychopaths...
Torture and death.
You're thinking, okay, well,
slavery.
You know what? F Walt. We don't care about Walt anymore. He has no good. He has no soul anymore. But by showing him in New Hampshire and, like, asking the guy to stay and hang out with him, and, yeah, exactly what you said. we somehow have in the phone call with Walter Jr. We somehow have reason to root for him again, kind of a little bit.
A little bit. We still know that this man, but we saw like it. They showed you again what it was about Walt in the beginning that made us empathize with him at all. Like we saw that guy. You know, kind of like, oh, yeah, that's what, the, you know, like he keeps saying that's what this is about. It's about his family. It's about providing for his family. The whole reason that he started doing this and keeping up, you know, continuing to be involved with this criminal enterprise that he is now a wanted man for, which we start out in the beginning of the episode, like Saul having a conversation like, oh, yeah, you're like super wanted. You're one of the most wanted fugitives in America. Like that's the level that he went to in that. In that episode, in that last...
Yeah, the two dead agents will do that.
Yeah.
It's not just about him being... Yeah. Like, because America kind of likes a criminal with talent. If it was just about him getting caught being this amazing meth cook, it would have been like kind of like, oh, what an interesting story. But the fact that, you know, he kidnapped his own daughter and there are two missing D agents makes him, in the eyes of the public... just like the bane of society.
He is the bane of society. And, you know, it's weird. It's weird the conversations that they have during the episode, like about him, like other people. That was the weird, that was something they were really stressing. But let's back up a little, okay? Because you mentioned the beginning, right off the bat, where, you know, we're pulling up to the vacuum cleaner place and it's the red van that we just saw, that we've seen now twice. And you're like, I think this scene was, like, great because you're like, oh, cool, we're picking up right where we left off. Walt's getting to the vacuum place. They pull in. They get out. It's Saul, who's actually trying to also disappear.
Another great ellipse.
Another great ellipse. And so you're like, oh, so he's helping Saul out too. Where, you know, what's going on here? Like, where's Walt? Is he gone? Great little scene with Saul. He's good every time, but... They start talking about, well, oh, how's he doing? Or, you know, like, oh, you're going to have a roommate. And start, you know, and making you realize that, oh, Walt's here still. He hasn't gone yet. And...
yeah, in a few minutes, you get
the
perfect idea of everything that's happened.
Yeah.
He's trying to set up Walt, but it's going to take a lot of time because he's such a hot client. And Saul is pulled out, and they're going to have their whole... thing, conversation.
Yeah, no, it was like really classic TV sort of way of moving the plot along without, you know, like just having two people sitting here having this conversation in this one little area. When he's taking the picture, like, you know, we also got to see how the whole thing works. This guy obviously makes people disappear. He comes in, he gets rid of everything in their lives. We don't see exactly everything he does, because I think there's, you know, there's obviously a lot more. It was played by Robert Forster, by the way, who was Max Cherry and Jackie Brown.
He was also one of the front runners for the role of Joe from Reservoir Dogs.
Really?
Which ended up going to Lawrence Tierney.
Yeah.
And that was a good choice, because Lawrence Tierney was really good. But
apparently Tarantino loves him. It seems like.
I feel like he wrote Jackie Brown just to...
yes.
All right, I'm going to hook you up with this role now.
Well, he was great in this episode. I felt like he was just a really good character. Both the character and also the way that he played it. But, so we got all that info, you know, that Rivero... even the end of the entire episode, like, just to throw it out there, like, movie ends with Walt's on the run... cops almost got to him. There's playing the Breaking Bad music. And you just, when they get to where we last saw him, he's just not there. And, like, the drink that he was drinking is there. Like, it's like, very, very classically done television, I feel like, in this episode. But still staying in this Breaking Bad, like, modern era of television style, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. They revealed information in very clever and deft ways. They didn't waste any time.
There was no wasted time. Even like, so like, even in the next scene after that, like, we, you know, we find out that the Schraders were broken into, that it was Jack and them, obviously, Jack and Todd breaking into, try to see the tapes that Jesse made, his confessions. And even that, it's like, oh, we check in on Marie driving home But then that's it. That's all we see of Marie. That's all we find out. You know, obviously we're going to see something in the next episode, but that's all we need to know. Like, her life is devastated.
Yeah.
Oh, and your house has been broken into. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, Marie really has no...
There's nothing else that we need to know about her.
She's riding around with agents and...
No, there was nothing else we needed to know, just about, like, where her life is at. It was like, I thought the way that they did that was, like, really good, not wasting time. Not like I am. But, I mean, from there on in, like, it was really the Todd show.
Oh, my God.
Almost.
Before even Todd... Because every episode in this second half of the season, Todd just gets better and better.
Better and better.
As far as, like, an all-time television villain.
I'd say every scene he gets better, especially in this episode. It's just one scene after another. It's just...
But they come into this scene, and they're watching the tape of Jesse's confession. And that's like, oh, my God, I wanted to throw up.
Specifically.
And not just because of the E. coli.
Specifically, yeah.
Because, like...
I puked so many times during this episode.
They take it away from Jesse and Hank's perspective, and they put it into the psychopath's criminal mind perspective of this guy was ratting us up. Oh my God, it was terrible. And the guy is in a cell, just a few feet away from them, and it makes you actually almost identify with them.
It did.
Like, oh my God, I can't believe Jesse's doing this.
That's good directing and writing, is when that you frame it in the right way. The same sentiment and scene. You identify with those that you're, like, involved with in the scene.
Yeah.
And that's... Which is weird, because it actually made me... When I think about the... When I go back to the confessions thing, it's like, even though... When we were watching the Walt's confession, like, that was a lie, and, like, through... I didn't identify with Hank and Marie. I was actually, at that point, for some reason, identifying with Walt still, like, being like, oh, yeah, you stuck it to him. You know? But here, I mean, I did find myself starting to identify with Todd, and then just kind of like in that weird way, like, oh, no. But then my first thought was, oh, they're going to kill Jesse. He's going to die now. And that was the first
if
thing.
If only. If only.
If only. He'd be a lot better off, that guy.
What a Jesse tease this episode was. Oh, my God.
It was. It's very similar to that first few episodes, where he's just kind of like in and out, but just his scenes were just so powerful. Like, in here,
So he's describing the murder of the kid on the dirt bike.
Of Drew Sharp, yes.
And Todd has just, the actor, oh my God, just this perfect little smirk. Like, oh, that's me, he's talking about me.
Like, he was proud. Like, it was like he was proud of what he did, especially because his uncle was there. And, like, he respects his uncle. And that, like...
And compared to Jesse, this guy who is ratting them all out and being a big, quote-unquote, pussy, as Jack calls him.
Yeah.
Like, my Uncle Jack thinks I'm like the bee's knees at this point.
Yeah, no, that it was so weird. But that's what kind of drew me back to, like, not identifying with them. They started, you know, calling him a pussy. And, like, you're like, oh, he's crying, guys, because his life has been ruined by... I'm like, oh, they don't care. Because to them, they're actual criminals.
But they're actual criminals who actually think that Jesse has done something wrong.
Yeah, well, because he broke the code.
Yeah. See, that's the difference.
Walter White thought the same thing when he found out that Jesse ratted on him. He flipped out, you know, and he was trying to kill Jesse because Jesse broke the code.
And that's what I gotta wonder about. Is Jesse paying a penance here?
Yeah, I would say he's paying a penance.
Is Jesse just being completely absolved by the producers of the show and everybody else is just
that's
shitting
a good
point on Jesse, but... I don't know. I kind of think maybe...
Well, I mean, we'll only find out if he lives or dies. If he dies, it's like an absolution almost.
Oh, he has to die.
Well, he has to, but... Part
he
of
has
me,
to die
part
because...
he wants him to live.
No, I want him to live, but...
But then
want
I don't
him?
Want him to live, because... But that's the penance part.
All right, so Jesse
that's
obviously...
That's the penance part.
Yeah, but he's... That's what I'm saying. I said this last week, before this episode, that he's already paid his penance.
Uh-huh.
And it's gone even farther now. Further. Further and farther.
Yeah, now it's just tragic.
Farther is distance, further is quality. He's going even further. He tries to escape. He does a really good job of trying to escape. He does, like, all these amazing things, and then
I had some problems there. I had some problems with the escape, but, I mean...
You had problems with the escape?
Yeah.
You had problems with the guy escaping from a cell that he was being kept in by
the
amateurs?
I had problems with, like, the scene of the escape and everything.
How?
Well, I mean, when it comes down to it, really, you have to suspend your belief there, because you're thinking about think about all the time that has lapsed on the show, okay? And then think about Jesse that we've known. And then think about the things that he's doing to escape.
But he's doing it for survival. Haven't you ever watched those shows where people can, like, lift 800 pounds over their head?
We never saw Jesse pick a lock ever, but now he's fucking picking all of his locks with a paperclip. Second, now he's hanging longer than people I even see at the gym who go to the gym every day, okay? The way he was hanging and lifting himself up.
He will die. Your body will give you extra.
Oh, I get that part. But also, there's a certain thing called reality. And also, there's a little thing that they really screwed up on, which is really sad because they're always good at that. They're always good at, like, well, not always, but making things seem a little bit realistic. When he unlatched that hook on his escape, he just kind of went, oh. He wasn't standing on anything. How is he going to slunk down?
I think he just released with one arm to give himself a little break.
That's not a break. Then you're holding your whole body up with one arm. You know what I mean? Like that it didn't make any sense as far as like reality sense.
Look,
like I understand the whole point of it, and you needed it in the episode to get to that next part. But
we're gonna get a pair of legit police handcuffs, and I'll crack those things with a paperclip in less than 10 minutes.
I'm so glad that we have a documentation of all of these things that you're claiming, because one day we're actually going to do them all.
$10.
Everyone in New Hampshire is going to be enslaved.
$10 to anybody in New Hampshire that I can crack a pair of handcuffs in less than 10 minutes with a paperclip.
We will not honor that.
Right, gambling is blah, blah, blah.
No, I'm just making the claim, trying to get you off for paying $10 to everyone in New Hampshire. But let's just go back, though, because, Jesse's right next to him, okay? And they're going to go outside and kill Jesse at this point when Uncle Jack is. So they go outside and Todd talks him out of it yet again. Todd saves Jesse's life again because it's almost like he does see him as, like, close in some way. I can't tell.
It's all about the meth, dude.
You really think so?
Yes, it's about the meth and about the Lydia.
They do say that. They say, like, oh, you know, you got the hots for Lydia.
Todd saving Jesse is worse than them killing him. Don't you understand?
Well, I get that, but I don't know. I don't know if it really is, because that really starts getting into is it better to be alive than to have suffered? And now you're getting far too philosophical for this one podcast to contain. Okay? Suffering.
I don't think there's any such thing as too philosophical.
I think there. I don't think we actually have the time. We can maybe do. There's no way that you're trying to say that it's better to die than to live a life full of suffering.
Well, no, it's better to die now than to know that you're going to die in 2 weeks after suffering a whole bunch.
But as long as you're alive, there's hope. If they had killed him originally and he hadn't been enslaved, there wouldn't have been a chance to break free.
Yeah, but Andrew needs to be alive, would she?
Okay. Well, things are getting out of control. Yes, Andrea would still be alive.
Betsy, we're operating on the principle that the listeners have already watched the show. That's why we got to do it, man. We got to give them a little bit here and move through.
So Andrea would still be alive, because as you guys all know, what they did to Jesse as for escaping was they brought him to Andrea's house and they shot her in the back of the head on her front steps.
Which, I'll admit, was a really cool scene.
It was a really cool scene. Aaron Paul freaks out, gets an Emmy next year based on his freak out.
That was the best. After I watched his scene of being in the crack house, or the crank house, I should say, and Walt finds him and he breaks down and I loved her so much when Jane died, and he won an Emmy for that episode. After I saw that, I'm like, this is the best he could ever do. No, he tops it. This scene was even better. Like, that is just pure, I don't even know who Aaron Paul is.
Yeah, no.
I feel bad for Jesse.
The anguish on his face was, like, I was thinking about, like, how hard is it to get that on your face, to be that upset?
But not even just because she's dead. And
Because he escaped.
He escaped, and he knows that Brock is still available for them to kill.
Well, they said it to him. They said it straight out. There's always the kid. There's still the kid.
But see, he knew that. That's like why it's.
It was it's devastating. Much. It was a devastating episode. It is almost too much.
It's too much because if you were Jesse, Would you want to live?
All too much. No, I wouldn't. But I am under myself. I am under the motto of no matter what happens, it's better to be alive than to be dead. Because with the life comes hope that whatever it is,
he's just going to be thinking. He was already in all this kind of guilt, and now he's just going to be thinking about Brock living his life without a mother just because of him. No, Jesse has got to go. There is no way that they can let him live after that. Is just too much. That is too much pain to put on one character. That's worse than even what Marie went through. Yeah, Marie's husband died. Okay, that's terrible. But no, this is even worse.
No, it is
for no reason whatsoever, except for the fact that Jesse is a good meth cook. This woman is dead, and this kid that he cares about's mother is dead, and. It's too much. It's too, like, I don't understand. I'm fascinated to see how they resolve it in the last episode. Maybe, so let's say, best case scenario, Jesse comes up with this amazing plan, kills them all. Then what's he going to do? I don't even see that happening.
Live life.
Like,
he just goes on living his life.
Brock can't die, can he?
Well, they could. They could kill Brock. I mean, they've killed children twice now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, and both of those kids have been shot. It's not like any, you know, like, they just, they've killed a couple kids that have randomly died.
Look, the story of...
Brock was poisoned by a man for, like, and we cheered, technically. We cheered when Jesse got on the side of Walt and helped all this happen. And we cheered for that until we found out that Walt poisoned him. And even then, we didn't go, oh, man. Walt is horrible. Down with this guy. We still kind of stuck around. We were like skeptical of him at that point. We're like, oh, he's a villain now.
Yeah, but he's such a chemical genius that he knew exactly how much poison to give the kid. It's the difference in shooting somebody in the back of the head for no reason. You see what I'm saying?
You sound like Walt. You sound like him.
Well,
explain to you, Josh, why poisoning a kid is better than shooting a woman.
I identify with Walt. Like, I understand. The point is, this is a tragedy. The story of Walter White is a tragedy, right?
Yeah.
So we all expected it to have a really bad ending. But there's got to be some
Jesse
glimmer.
Jesse killed Gail.
So Jesse killed Gail, so therefore he is totally subject to just beating and chains and... a woman that he cares about being murdered and...
No, I mean, but that's...
What, like...
Them's the breaks.
them is the breaks.
You know, just... like, if that's the life... That's what I've taken away from this show entirely is... Best not to start dealing or selling...
It's just a bummer, man.
Methamphetamines at
this
all.
This whole episode bummed me out, like, big time.
Well, it is a huge bummer.
Sad.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, like, every part of it, even, like... Even, I mean, obviously we're excited because we're like, oh, what's going to happen now? And at the end, where Walt is now off and running and we know that he gets a machine gun after, you know, we know that he's going after someone. That's exciting. But yeah, the rest of it, pretty much a bummer.
But it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter who the machine gun is for or who the ricin is for. There's no good ending for anybody to be had here. Don't you see what I'm saying? Like, Skylar, you know, they had the phone call. That was kind of a good bone they threw us, you know. Like, Walt really loves Skylar, and he wants Walter Jr. to have a nice life and all this stuff. And then, what happens with Skylar? What was, like, the biggest Skylar scene in this episode?
She had her whole family threatened because of Lydia.
Yeah, she walks into Holly's room.
She's seen Lydia's face.
She walks into Holly's room, and there's Todd with... How do you walk into a house that is being monitored by the police?
Well, that's the big thing I've been hearing and reading, like, all day, is, like, Todd is a ninja. Todd and the rest of the Nazis are ninjas,
they're
clearly.
Best criminals ever. They can do anything.
Or Vince Gilligan himself said today on the Insider podcast there that he's like, oh, obviously Todd and them are wearing their scuba outfits. They're hiding in the pool the whole time. Like, because you start to go, like, well, yeah, how the hell did they break in there?
Well,
again, suspend your belief for the point of pushing the plot along.
You got to suspend your belief because
you always got to do it with television shows. But
there are a lot of scenes where they're just driving away when they clearly would have been caught.
Yeah,
like Walter leaving with the truck, he clearly would have been nabbed by a cop, especially since there was a call put in that the guy just tried to stab his mother and...
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, okay, fine. Forget about that. The point is, Skylar thinks everything's fine, and now Todd is all up her ass.
Well, nothing's fine for her. Her life is a complete shambles, and they're basically going to throw the book at her unless she remembers information. Unless she comes up with something. But the thing that she could remember is the thing that Todd is there for, which is because she saw Lydia's face at the car wash. And obviously Skylar never remembered that, or she probably would have said something, I'm assuming. I don't see why she wouldn't have. It seems like now that Walt's gone, she's going to cooperate with the police the best of her ability.
Well, she doesn't really know anything. She knows a couple things,
yeah,
but that was since she doesn't actually know anything, she probably just figures, I don't need to say anything.
Yeah.
So she probably, I'm sure she remembered Lydia, but she didn't feel the need. There's no proof that she ever met her.
But Todd's there. Todd's there with the rest of the Nazis to protect his lady, which we get into more of that in this episode, too. Like, I just want, before, but also let's point out that Todd, even when he was threatening her, was not really threatening in, like, he didn't say overtly. Obviously, men in your house wearing ski masks, it's a little threatening. But, like, in what he was saying, he didn't really say, we're going to kill you. I'm going to get your baby. It was, like, really just the act of them being there and him being like, hey, you remember that lady? You don't need to tell them about her.
If my friend takes his hand off your mouth, you're not going to scream, are you? Like, just the delivery is so perfect.
Perfect.
There's... What did Jesse call him? The beady-eyed psycho? He just kind of has, like, these puppy dog eyes.
Yeah, puppy dog eyes. And by the end of this, it's like it's already happened. I used to look at Jesse Plemons as Landry Lance Clark from Friday Night Lights, and he was this lovable character. Also, I think I pointed it out a few weeks ago, also killed a man on an episode.
Wait, there's murder in Friday Night Lights?
Oh, this is all second season thing that happens.
Well, you just ruined that for me. Thanks, buddy.
He was being a white knight. He was being a white knight for a hot chick, right? Mm. So, you know, I mean, we're talking really.
Kind of like the intro scene to Con Air starring Nicolas Cage.
I don't think I've ever seen Con Air.
You've never seen Con Air?
No, it looks like a piece of shit.
You're insane. That's like the best movie of all time.
I wait like 5 years before I see movies, and then like I wait long enough to go, this Con Air, really?
Con Air, John Malkovich, Steve Buscemi as like the weird
really?
Like, pedophile cannibal.
What am I thinking of? Air Force One.
It's
Con Air. It's Con Air. But either way, so he—that's my thought of him, and like always. And now it's just going to be Todd, and it's like really exciting almost. Even though I loved him as this really nice character, but it's almost like. Is as if this character of Landry, who was that way, became Todd because he is so nice and calm and like just has this good delivery, like in his voice.
Mm.
But that's what makes up this character so good. Is all of these scenes like he talks his uncle out of killing Jesse, but he does it on a completely like. Hey, we could make all this money. And the uncle says the smartest thing that anyone's ever said on the show. I just got $30 million. I've got all the money in the world. Why would I want to... What do I care about making meth?
Which is something I believe I voiced last week on this podcast.
Yes. I said criminals always want more. But here, we see the hardened criminals.
The hardened criminals don't want more.
They don't want more.
There's no need for more. It's just this made-up reason.
Todd's only after it just because he wants to, like... For some reason, he seems to actually like cooking meth well.
He wants to become good at cooking meth.
He wants
meth.
To become good at it.
And he wants the fact that he's good at cooking meth to make Lydia want to bang him.
Yes, because that's the only person in his world who could... And she obviously tends to like men who cook meth because... So, that's the other part. So, you got that. Saves Jesse. Okay. Talks his uncle out of killing Jesse. Right there, goes to meet Lydia. He's dressed like it's a first date. He's totally got the hots for her.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
Lydia comes in, sits the table behind him.
Yes, which...
He can talk like this, and he's turning the whole time.
He's turning the whole time. so she's like pretty much like, forget you guys. This is too much risk. I'm out of here, blah, blah, blah. And he says, oh, but it's 92% now. And she just stops, like, almost like she's fluttered and has to fan herself. I almost expected her to get out of fan.
She was aroused.
She was like, 92%?
Which insulted me, and this is why, again, another example of how brilliantly this show has made people, at least people who aren't, like, madly in love with Jesse, identify with Walter White. Because she says 92%, that's Heisenberg number. It's not a Heisenberg
number. No, it's not a Heisenberg number.
Heisenberg's like 99%,
yeah,
bitch.
Yeah.
What are you talking
Heisenberg
about?
Heisenberg doesn't go below 96.
Gale was at 96%, and he was just like
he was worshiping envious.
At the feet of Walter. Are you kidding me, bitch? 92%? That just made me angry. Like, she doesn't even know this business. I thought she was like a genius. I thought she knew everything that was happening.
No, but she gets her
information is
her panties get wet over 92%, which
big time.
But not that. Although, did you see after that? So he basically started saying these creepy things to her in the nicest manner, which was, "Oh, we can be good. We're good for each other. We're good. We're like mutually good
for each other. Mutually good." Best cutaway to a scene ever. He's like, he picks a piece of lint off her shirt.
I'm like, okay. A, it's creepy. Does she know he's doing it? And also, are they really trying to hammer home this whole symbiotic mutual relationship thing? Like, I'm picking stuff off of you. I'm like an ape.
Yeah, exactly.
Bugs off your back.
The bugs and the apes and all that stuff. Very just heavy-handed. But
heavy-handed.
Is there going to be time in the finale for Todd to rape Lydia? Because I feel like that has to happen, right?
Oh, no. I don't think it will. I don't think it will. I think she dies. I think there might be a struggle. But I definitely think that he's going to overstep those weird boundaries again, like he did in that episode where they were in the their little super lab or whatever. But I don't think it's going to get that far. I think something's going to stop Todd. Certainly not his uncle or Kenny, who said it's – I think he said it was all about the – He made a diamond shape.
Which I'd never seen. It actually kind of does look.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You can't see it, but Jeff is making a diamond shape area that's supposed to represent the women's
genitals. You got the two thumbs on the top and the two index fingers on the bottom. It's very simple.
Yeah, the whole. It's one of the things that's making Todd really good. It's like he cares for Lydia. Like, I mean, and then he brings Jesse ice cream. Because his cook was so good. He brings him not just ice cream, Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Two different kinds.
I mean, that's like, that's not just, hey, I brought you some stuff I got at, like, you know, like the Neapolitan shit that I just bought from the store down the street and the carton's falling apart because it's not made very well. It's like, actually, here you go. Like, it's so, I don't even know how to describe.
Well, that's
at this point. It's like that tug between, like, this. The fact that he seems caring, and I almost think that he is caring, like he's like a psychopath or something, but I can't tell, like psychopaths are not supposed to have any empathy. So is everything a calculated decision for him?
Yeah. Well, you can have empathies. Well, it's a difference between a psychopath and a sociopath. I'm not really sure which one he is, but in his mind, even though he knows that Jesse is a dead man, he still thinks that there's no reason for Jesse not to be appreciative of some ice cream.
Yeah.
Like, oh, even though you're chained in my backyard and we
underground
and you're definitely going to be murdered and I will murder your loved ones at a moment's notice, here's some ice cream, man. That was a really good cook. You know, it's just like he actually thinks.
Good, we got it up.
It was over 90%.
Can't wait to cook tomorrow, I think he said. Like, this guy's just.
We got a big day, yeah.
And it's really tough because, again, I start myself, the sick part of me is like, yeah, I love Todd. I'm like, oh, wait, I hate Todd because he's an evil monster. I shouldn't.
Yeah, and then even when you get to the scene with Andrea.
Which that's, I mean, when you get to Andrea, like, what's his last words?
He says.
Sorry.
Just as long as you know it's not personal.
It's like, nothing personal.
What reason is there to say that to somebody before you shoot them?
The moment before you shoot them in the
back
of the head.
Even when they're not, they don't even know that they're about to be shot. If they were like face to face and it's not personal and like, okay, fine, do it. But no, she was turned around.
Her last thought was what?
Yeah, like what do you mean? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
He's an amazing.
I can't wait to see where they bring him, how they bring him in. If there's like, I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Walt him, you know, talk that happens in the next episode. There's got to be.
We're talking about, what, like a 13, 14 episode arc here where this guy came in as a exterminator who specialized in robbing houses.
Yep. But he had a crazy criminal family.
Yeah.
Who were in jail.
And all of a sudden you bring in Uncle Jack. They murder 11 guys in prison, and now he's like the biggest villain in television history.
And it's really good, too. It's one of those surprises that you didn't see coming. Like, oh, I didn't know in season 5 you'd introduce like one of your best characters. But they did. So kudos to the writers.
Yes, kudos.
Now, what's going on with Walt is a whole nother thing. He's also in captivity in some way, you'd say. But that's torture.
But how are you going to drop somebody off in the woods with nothing but a DVD player and not give him like an amazing collection of DVDs? Like, what we've been talking about, what shows you're watching, what shows you're going to watch, that would be a cool couple months for me if you just gave me a bunch of DVDs, like new shows, like old movies and stuff. But no, like, what is this about? Just think about that. Just think about being
in... No, I couldn't. I was
no internet,
it.
No phone, no television. Nothing.
He couldn't leave. He couldn't leave the property, which we
no
saw.
No people. That's terrible.
Yeah, all he had there was food, basically, just that land. And that's the worst, because after all that just happened to him, now he's just here to sit and think, which is what the vacuum repair guy had actually said to him right before he left, was, you know, the good way for you to lay low and kind of collect your thoughts or something like that, which is, you know, but that's all he could do, like, sitting here. And he tried to leave, because as soon as he found out there was a town, you know, he was like, oh, yeah, I promise, I'm not going to go anywhere. You saw it instantly, that lie. Like, yep, uh-huh, just trying to get rid of him. But then he didn't have the balls to actually walk out the gate. And I think it was because the guy said, I won't be coming back if you do that.
It was a great scene, because he walks down to the gate and just looking at the road, knowing that if he takes a few more steps... There could be just one person that sees him that recognizes him on the TV. He's like, I really can't.
You will get caught.
Yeah.
It was very – that whole thing was great. So they flash forward through like a couple months later, right? We're going to go with like 3-4 maybe. He's got a full beard. He's wicked thin.
Well, it might be up to a year because
– No, I saw between 4 and 6. I think even Vince said 6.
Okay. Maybe. Because we had this issue with the timeline earlier when we said it was a year, but then when he comes back, then he's 52.
Yeah.
At the beginning of Live Free or Die. So how could it be 6 months?
Well, we don't know if it's his actual birthday. It's the whole thing. It's Mr. Lambert's birthday, for sure, but we don't know if it's Walt's.
Look, you're not making your birthday number out of bacon if it's not your real birthday.
Okay, well, either way. So it's been a while. It has been a year. It definitely has been a year. Like, we even established in other episodes that, like, by the time that we jump into getting close to the end, it's like we're about 3 or 4 months out. So we'll say, like, 3 to 6. But either way, so it's been a while. He's got a full beard. He's super thin, okay, because obviously he's got the cancers.
Yeah.
He's just, like, totally in this weakened state. And it's a part of me was really sad. His wedding ring falls off, you know, just because that's how thin he is. And then the guy brings all the news and everything that you're assuming that's what he asks for every month. And
still no DVDs, though.
Still no DVDs, yeah.
Still no Sons of Anarchy.
I was actually wondering about that. Oh, don't even get me started.
The Wire. Sopranos?
Okay, you can go with any of those. But, the saddest part, and it's something that we saw earlier in the show too, was that it was like this Walter Mike Heisenberg, he just doesn't matter anymore, for one.
No.
Like, his name to these people, it doesn't matter. They talk about how much it means to the world, but you see him not actually be able to throw his weight around to anyone at this point.
We had the scene with Saul when he's like trying to get Saul to find hitmen.
That's what I'm saying.
He put this big hit out on Jack, and this is like even before he goes out to New Hampshire, and he walks up to him, and the whole "it's not over till I say it's over" thing. He just starts coughing, and Saul's like,
"Well, that was the thing." So he's like basically in Saul's face, like, you know, like trying to like stare him down, which he did in a other season before, and then he gets the freaking cancer coughs, and that's it. You know, like it's Saul's not going to obviously roll over. Then it's very obvious that he. What does he matter anymore?
He's just
a sad, weak man who's going to die.
Yeah.
And then you get that here, where he's trying to... He has to pay vacuum-disappearing guy, Ed, to hang out with him.
That was one of the saddest scenes.
And the guy talked him down.
He talked him down
for two hours to an hour.
To play cards. Just stay a little longer.
It was so sad. And that's where it starts to come in again. When you start going, oh, Walter White, I feel so bad. You're a dying man now. And you just, it's almost like all the other stuff's gone, except for the fact that we saw Jesse in a pit and Andrea get killed.
Yeah, except for Jesse, it was pretty sad. You kind of had to split up your sadness between the two characters because it was a totally different ballgame. But what Walter's isolation reminded me of was two things. One was the movie Murder in the First, starring Christian Slater and Kevin Bacon. Do you remember that movie? Where poor Kevin Bacon... Kevin Bacon gets thrown into the solitary confinement for like a year.
No, I've never seen Murder in the First. And his only friend is
a spider. You never seen Murder in the First?
No.
That's crazy. It's kind of like that. You know, he just like wants to talk to the spider, but it's a spider, so he can't really talk. And the other thing that it reminded me of...
spider up there with other inanimate things, like Wilson.
Well, a spider's an...
Yes, it's an animate object, but it can't talk or anything. It has no consciousness, so let's just lump it in with Wilson. But anyway.
Moving on. I forgot the second movie it was comparable to, so let's just move on.
I killed that. That's cool.
That's okay.
That's what I do.
That's what you do.
I kill things that you enjoy.
Specialty.
You were saying how he's just like by himself and sad and alone and has nothing and he's in the woods.
Yeah.
But then he gets a thought when he's sitting there by himself alone in the woods after he's done his own chemo, which is also like crazy. This dude's trying to prolong his life. For whatever reason.
Another sad scene because he's been using his cancer to get sympathy for people for the entire last season. And you see him ask the guy because the guy's having trouble. He's not a doctor. He can't put the...
But he did watch some videos on YouTube.
He watched some videos on YouTube. This is how you put the central line in. He's like, just let me do it. I'll do it. I'm Walter White. I'm tough. And he can't do it.
No.
It's so sad because we're all just the same.
So at the same time, while like his house has been like destroyed, his name has been spray painted on it because now he's a boogeyman sort of thing. He's just like a weak individual that just can't. He's practically helpless almost at this point.
Yeah,
he's a thing to look at and take pity on.
Godfather Part 3. That was the other movie.
Godfather Part 3.
Michael Corleone ends up old, sick, dying, alone in a chair. Carry on.
Yeah, it didn't even get to go out in a blaze of glory like Scarface, you know, which is weird because that's what...
Or even Sonny, or even The Godfather, who he died in a tomato patch, but he still got the whole shoot 'em up scene.
Well, but then we get this whole... from there on in, what sets in motion us going to the next episode is he's chilling in his cabin in the woods, and he sees his box of Ensure, like... meal protein supplements, and it clicks because he was actually asking the guy if he could get money to his people there.
Impossible because
they're watching. So but then he's like, he figures, oh, I can pack it up in this Ensure box and I can send it. But how?
This is a man who made poison out of beans.
Yes.
Who made a battery out of screws and bolts from an RV. Who made an explosive substance in a beaker. And it took him 6 months to realize...
There's a box there.
He could go, I could put money...
There's a box in there. Oh, there's a thing on the postal service.
Send it to someone else I know.
Well, that's the key. I don't know if he saw the insurer and somehow it made him think of Lewis. I don't know what Lewis's deal is. Like, if Lewis is a weak, fragile dude who, like, you know, but...
Lewis is totally under the control of Flynn, a.k.a. Walter Jr.
a.k.a. Heisenberg Jr.
Heisenberg Jr.
So then he's like, I'm going to send it to Lewis. But so he packs it up, ties a little ribbon on it, which I found to be funny. And then he, like, walks. He finally makes that, like, walk down to the road, which it seemed like he was a little trepidatious. Is that a word? Or is it trepidous?
Trepidatious? Yes.
All right. Well, he starts down that road very slowly, like he doesn't want to go. And then he – but then that's it. So he makes his way to a bar. And automatically at this point, you're like, you're fucking up, buddy. Like, this is the one thing you weren't supposed to do. Yeah. Like, you have even less things that you're not supposed to do than people that own Mogwai. And yet, like, you can't do this one thing. Just stay in the fucking cabin. You know what I mean? Just stay in the cabin. Have that other guy, next time you come, send it.
Well, you know what I was thinking about when I watched that scene is it's been a few months, and how long
he was just there saying that there's so much going on. It's on the news.
That's fine, but how long can you really stay secluded like that? And also,
with no DVDs, especially.
Yeah, no DVDs. And if going back to a movie that has been resounding in my heart, Ted. Starring Mila Kunis.
Yes, we're well aware.
The intro by Patrick Stewart, eventually nobody gives a shit. So he's probably thinking, come on.
I guess. It's just stupid. It's still stupid. But, you know, he wants to help his family, and that's... And I guess that's what matters. So his bright idea is, I'm going to call up Walter Jr. at high school, and I'm going to say I'm Aunt Marie. And so they call him. He's in a chemistry class, it looks like, which is also obviously funny and heavy-handed at the same time. And he calls up. At first, he's got Walter on the phone. He's like, hey, it's really me, your father. And he explains the entire – everything he's going to do. And you think Walt Jr. is cool.
Yeah, oh, he's playing it cool.
He's playing it so cool. Like, he's just like, yeah. And like, you're like, oh, wow. You know, like – is he really gonna butt?
Then why don't you just fucking die already?
Oh, he fucks it all up.
He actually said that. He actually said those words again.
At first, in that clip, he was being sarcastic.
He was just being a punk
teenager. Like, oh, why don't you just give up? Because I'm so much tougher than you because I have MS or whatever, Parkinson's, who cares? And you're giving up on cancer. And now he's like, why are you still alive? Why are you still alive? Oh, by the way, you killed Uncle Hank.
Yeah, he says that like 80 times, and Walt keeps trying to tell him, like, no, I'm trying to do this for your family, which then one of the most saddest lines, again, Walt's just like, at this point, you're like, I'm so sympathetic to you, again, even though you just caused all this destruction, is, don't make it all be for nothing.
You killed Uncle Hank.
Don't make it all be for nothing.
You killed Uncle Hank.
But don't make it all be for nothing. Dude, nobody can win this argument, which is why...
Can I just say that... How did Uncle Hank die?
It was Jack, obviously.
Oh, okay. But...
And it was also... But they don't know that yet. That's the thing. No one knows what actually happened.
But Walter killed him. Walter killed Uncle Hank.
But he didn't. So that part doesn't matter. The point is, the whole thing blows up in his face. And what does Walt do? He basically just gives up. That was it. That was the give up. I was like, well, I walked down here. That guy's probably not going to come back now because I've been seen, you know. And so he just gives up. He calls the DEA in Albuquerque and says, I'm looking for someone to talk to the Walter White case. Who's this? Walter White. Just puts the phone down. Doesn't even hang it up. Did he hang it up or he just put it down, right?
No, he didn't hang it up.
Okay. And then he goes over and he orders a drink of scotch and he has her start flipping around the TV. And then, lo and behold, what does he come across?
The two greatest characters in television history.
That's right.
Elliot and Gretchen. First of all, here's the thing about Elliot and Gretchen.
Elliot and Gretchen Schwartz.
Elliot is gay, and Gretchen's a lesbian. So how are they a couple?
Oh, is that...
To me, it seems pretty obvious.
Well, I didn't get that. I think I missed some of the cues there.
Maybe this could be like a spinoff.
No, well, that's how it's going to be on the Saul show. But so he sees them on TV, and they're being questioned by Charlie Rose about their fictional company, Grey Matter, and about its connection to Walter White. And they just start trashing him, saying that the only thing he ever contributed was the name. And it's very clear that what happens here is he just his ego comes back again, because can't say that to Walter White, and he just takes off. So now the cops get there, so it all ends. And then he's gone, and we know that he ends up somewhere. I don't know. He ends up back in Albuquerque with the giant gun after going to Denny's. He's going to have the shits, what that comes down to. And it's just the perfect setup. It's the perfect setup going into the next episode. Any predictions? Do you think anything
Well, like I said, I think Jesse has to die. I really don't care how, because it's too sad to even think about his subplot. I think that maybe the shotgun and the ricin is like some sort of combo effort to go back and forth between maybe trying to like ward off Jack and his dudes, but also maybe like plan some kind of shady stuff for Elliot and Gretchen.
I don't think so. I've seen some of that, and I kind of get why people would say that, but I think they were the impetus, not why he's not leaving to go after them or to do have anything to do with them. I could be wrong. The racing could be for them.
They can't be on the show and not come up again in the finale. This was the
penetration. Well, I don't think Badger and Skinny Pete are going to come up in the finale.
Were they in the last episode?
No, but...
No, I'm saying this last show.
Oh, that show. No, I don't think
They're like there.
I really don't think so. I could be completely wrong, and I'll admit it.
Look, he had the falling out with Walt Jr. already, so he's not worried about the money anymore. I think he just wants to go out in a blaze of glory. I think he wants to stick it to them. I think he wants to stick it to Jack. Because
that's where it all started, right, with them?
Yeah. Yeah, the amazing scene where Gretchen's like, where'd you get the money from? Where'd you get the money from? Fuck you.
Yeah.
Great scene.
Well, I can't wait. I can't wait because a part of me can't, but at the same time, it's not like the episode ended in a way like the week before where you're like, I need to know now. You know, like, it's like now I almost wish I had like 2 weeks so I could like totally get completely.
They're starting a marathon.
I know. Wednesday.
I wish that I just was not working or anything. I could just watch every episode.
Well, Jeff, we both have 60 Netflix, hours, but it's different. Bad. That's the thing.
Yeah,
but
if it's on TV. Something on TV, that is totally different.
Yeah, it is totally different because I could watch it at any time, but I don't. But
there's just some kind of glory about catching a series on TV in a row and not missing any.
Also, they're doing a big thing next week for the finale. Talking Bad is going to be longer. And they're going to have tons of people from the show, like, all there together. And I think they might be doing it from the Forever Hollywood Forever Cemetery there. That big finale party that they're doing.
Yeah.
You can win.
Aaron Paul's going to be there.
He's going to
be tweeting.
We need to toast something from toast Breaking Bad from Instagram. And you could win.
That's all you, partner. I don't have an Instagram.
Oh, that's true. Well, all right. I guess we'll see what happens next week. I'm kind of giddy. Now, other big stuff that happened last night was the Emmys, and Breaking Bad did pretty well. Not as well as it could have done, obviously. But
Bryan Cranston did not win. Aaron Paul did not win.
No,
I was wrong on both counts.
Yeah, they seem like they would have been locks, but nope. But instead, Anna Gunn did win, and that's pretty huge. Supporting actress. And they also won, obviously, the big one, which was Best Drama.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good turnout. I mean, Aaron Paul and Cranston, they've already won.
I might have said it last week. I don't remember, but I definitely tweeted it last night. If there was anyone to beat Aaron Paul or Mike, the guy, Jonathan Banks, for a supporting actor, it was gonna have to be Bobby Cannavale because he was just really, really good. He was that scary guy on the last season of
Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire there.
Yeah, it was a lot of tough categories. A lot of categories that seemed straightforward but didn't necessarily go the way that you thought they were gonna go.
No, that was like everything. Like Jeff Daniels beating that whole field right there. Like, I haven't seen House of Cards, but I've heard so many good things about it, especially about Kevin Spacey, that...
No, there's no way Kevin Spacey was ever...
But he probably could have beat Jeff Daniels. Damian Lewis could have definitely beat Jeff Daniels. John Hamm, without a doubt.
I don't know. I'm a big Jeff Daniels fan.
I know. When we've both seen the show, but do you really think he was that good?
I think he was great.
I don't know. It's weird.
It's a hard character to pull off when you have that kind of, you know, fast-paced dialogue and he went from both ends of the spectrum from being the jerk to the good guy, and he actually pulled off being. This is the thing about a craft show. When you're a famous news anchor, And it, you don't be like, ah, I could never buy Jeff Daniels as a news anchor. He seemed like he was really good.
No, I did.
I would totally watch Jeff Daniels if he was like Brian Williams.
Okay, I like him as Will McAvoy. But I just didn't think his character stood out to me that. No. But you know who really did stand out? Jim Parsons as Sheldon Cooper.
Well,
the Big Bang Theory.
He's a very good physicist, and he's funny because physicists don't really know how to, like...
That's the whole joke of the show! That is the whole joke of the show. I have major problems with that show, and specifically that character, because it's only one joke.
This is like a Richard rant coming on, I think.
No, I'm done. Actually, you guys are lucky, because I ranted... so much about it before, because Jeff thinks that the show is funny.
Look, the show is funny. I don't think it's funny. It's funny. If you don't think it's funny, then there's something wrong with your brain. Okay? They make for a good ensemble because they're nerds and they're trying to like be normal, but they're still proud of their craft. And it's funny, man. It's a funny show. Okay? But look, I don't agree with Jim Parsons being a 3-time Emmy winner.
Just the people that he
just
beat.
Like, I don't. Fine, but it's. Here's the thing about separating, because the Academy Awards, you have best this, best that.
Yeah.
The Emmys, the Golden Globes, they separate things into categories. You have comedies, you have dramas, you have variety shows, all that crap. You can't put people together as a comedy category, as actors. If you don't think they're funny, you're not going to vote for them. Yeah, maybe Louis C.K. or Bateman are better in the role or more talented.
I would have went Alec Baldwin as Jack Donaghy before.
Everybody knows Alec Baldwin's great. But the point is, if you are watching these 5 or 6 actors and you think that The Big Bang Theory is the funniest show and you think he's the funniest actor, you're going to vote for him. Frasier has won more Emmys than any show in history. How many people out there think that Frasier is the best show ever? It's not a, you know, Seinfeld. Number one show, TV Guide lists. Best show of all time. Everyone watches Seinfeld. How many reruns of Frasier do you catch every night? Seinfeld is on 4 or 5 times a day across 3 or 4 different networks. It won Best Comedy 1 time. Jason Alexander, 0 Best Supporting Actor Emmys.
Yeah, that's a
David Hyde Pierce won like 7.
And it shouldn't have happened.
That's just it, just let it go, man.
Emmy
just
voters.
Let it go.
So what you're saying is the Emmys are stupid.
The Emmys are stupid.
They're very stupid. That's what I got out of that last
Shakespeare
night.
Shakespeare in Love was Best Picture. All award shows are stupid. Why am I obsessed with watching them? I don't know. Maybe because you're looking for that one moment where you're like, oh yeah, they really got it.
They really got it. Yeah, but it. I mean, I guess you know I'm hypocritical because I'll be like, yeah, they really got it. Actually, that's the tough part. Is actually like, no. See, Anna Gunn, she probably was one of the best people in that category.
She had a lot of good work this last season.
Yeah.
The first 4 seasons, I hated her. But Skylar's character is just so, like, messed up at the end of the series that you could look at a few of her episodes and say she's done some really good work.
I don't know, man. I don't even know what to do anymore. I don't even know what
to
do.
Best Comedy?
Best Comedy was Modern Family, as it probably should be.
See, there you go. There's another example. Modern Family, Best Comedy. You have 3 guys nominated in the Best Supporting Actor category. None of them win. Why? Because they're all taking votes away from each other. If you think Modern Family is funny and you're voting for the Emmy for Best Supporting Actor, some people are going to vote for one guy or the other guy or the other guy, and then one of the other guys is going to win. So who ended up winning?
Tony Hale.
Tony Hale.
From Veep.
Oh, yeah. The
Buster Bluth.
Buster Bluth. Which he's good, but is he better?
He's very good on that show, I'd actually say.
Is he better than any of those 3 guys from Modern Family? I would say no.
Well, can be. I'd say it can be.
It's the problem with voting. At some point...
Well, that's the problem is I feel like they need to spread the voting out more because I feel like what they're going to always have is people that are voting for, you know, like obviously that's the HBO show. You know what I mean? And it's got Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You know, like, I feel like that show is going to get, like, the older voters because, you know, who else in that category would even, like, who would they vote for? Like, these older, they're not going to vote for the guy from Girls. You know what I mean? Like, that's the problem, I think, with, like, this voting.
Well, here's the thing about TV.
Let me vote. Somebody get me an Emmy ballot next year.
It doesn't matter. Here's the thing about TV, here's where the Emmys are different from the Oscars, okay? The Oscars, you get one chance. Your movie comes out, and then it's up for whatever it is that year, either wins or loses. And if the movie's great, it'll get viewed, and it'll get replayed and bought and purchased over a long period of time. Fine. You have some great movies that did not get any Oscars, like Al Pacino was in this amazing run of movies in the 70s. Never won Best Actor. He lost, like, the guy from Flowers for Algernon or some crap.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it doesn't matter because Al Pacino's career got it himself. He didn't need the Oscars. Here's the Emmys, you have chances. Your TV show is coming out year after year after year. So you can't just be like – no one's going to be like, oh, Seinfeld – won so many fewer Emmys than Frasier. Everyone knows now that Seinfeld was a better show than Frasier. Why? Because more people still love it years after they're both off the air. That's it. That's the great thing about TV. It doesn't matter if you win the Emmys. You're going to be successful
based on why don't we just give out participation ribbons then? Why don't we just say, okay, we're going to give it to you people. You're good. You're not as good as the really good guys, but we're going to give you this Emmy.
Look, man.
John Cryer. Fuck! John Cryer got an Emmy last year. Are you kidding me? Yes. Yes. That's what I'm talking about. Like, if it's supposed to be a celebration of the best in the craft, then how can anyone legitimately say that John Cryer deserved an Emmy? If voting is getting these people in that don't deserve it over other people, then maybe they need to think of a different way to do it. Here's what it says for Jim Parsons, right? Did you read this? Jim Parsons continues to bring a winning combination of indelible charm, charisma, and comedic timing to his roles on screen and on stage, establishing himself as one of Hollywood's leading men. Okay, that last part, that's false. He's a leading man? You're going to say he's a leading man? Has he even had a romantic lead on the show?
I don't live in Hollywood.
Also, comedic timing? I don't think that anyone who's only ever done that type of comedy can be said that they have good comedic timing.
All right, Josh, you told me that you've seen 10, 12 episodes of The Big Bang Theory. If you sit down and watch every episode with me...
There's no way I'm sitting down and watching every episode.
Then I don't want to hear your opinion. I don't want to hear your opinion. I don't want to hear it.
Let me down a bad path.
I actually don't want to hear it then.
Well, fine. Then you will never hear my opinion ever again.
Man, the Emmys are stupid. It's entertainment. You watch it so that you can get mad about it. That's the only reason. Like Jim Parsons, I'm sure he feels great. His parents are happy that, oh, my son won 3 Emmys. But it doesn't matter. All the people that were nominated, they're all very successful, making lots of money, impacting the industry. We're all watching them. We all like them. It doesn't matter who wins. Okay, it's a select group of people and a viewing audience of over 300 million people who are voting for them, okay? But you can't say let the people vote because then you have the People's Choice Awards and those are even dumber.
Those are even dumber, it's true.
So it's just something to do. I don't even know.
I wish there was a way because I was just going to say, well, Jeff, I bet you if we said this about, you know, like a football team over another football team, you'd be like, no, the best team should win.
The best team wins. That's the great thing about sports. The best team wins because you actually have to play each other.
Yes, but...
Jack Nicholson has won 4 Oscars. Al Pacino's won 1. Who's a better actor? Al Pacino. Fact. Putting it right there. I don't give a shit.
All right. Well, that's a good point. But at the same time, I don't know. It still leaves me with a bad taste in my mouth.
If David Hyde Pierce were worthy of 7 Emmys... then he would be working right now. Where is David Hyde Pierce?
I'm assuming he is on Broadway. Nobody quote me on that, but that's my guess.
He just must be on Broadway. Maybe he's in Las Vegas. Maybe he's going to be the intro to Britney Spears' new show. By the way, Britney Spears in Las Vegas, that's going to be the best thing of all time. We need to go. We need to go next year. We need to forget the London trip.
All right,
we're not going to London. Jeff, okay? You're going to take a vacation next year. We're both going to go see Britney Spears in Las Vegas because I can't even believe how great that's going to be.
You can take the show from here, Jeff. It's now the mailman, okay? Now the mailman. It's the mailman and...
The mailman and myself.
And the mailman and himself because that's it. I'm out.
Apparently, Josh Richer is too good to see Britney Spears in Las Vegas, which, let's face it, is going to be the ultimate experience in entertainment. So that's all we have for you this week.
I forgot my phone.
That's all we have for you next week. Tune in next week when I, the mailman, exclusively preview or review the last episode of Breaking Bad. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my top 10 reasons why Breaking Bad was the greatest show of all time. And then I'm going to give you my top 10 reasons why The Wire was a better show than Breaking Bad. And then you're going to try to figure out how those two facts can be true at the same time. All right. See you next week. Jesse's going to die. Peace out. Kill us, your scumbag blues. Kill us, your scumbag blues. Blues. Johnny Winter. Johnny.